Hey, this is Andrew Von Ritchie from Pretty Awesome Gamers Charity, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to A Radio Geekly. I am Just Jess, and thank you so much for joining us this morning on a rainy, gray Friday morning, but it's December. It's the end of 2016, and I am excited to see what the future holds for 2017. Thank you to everyone who donated for the 3-day winter membership drive. We were able to reach our goal and surpass it. So thanks to all of our new members, all of our increasing members. We appreciate you and welcome to the KBOO community. In today's show, we are going to talk about gatekeeping. It is a multi-part series with today we are going to be focusing on the oppression of women, the term fake geek girl, and the like. So in the studio with me today are some of my collective members, Tabitha and David. Good morning to both of you.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going for you guys? Are you enjoying this gray, rainy day?
I'm kind of used to it, so.
It is good. It's what you expect.
Right. Yeah. I think the weather is actually lining up with the seasons.
Yeah, the way I see it, if I can get somewhere without being wet, I mean, I'm okay.
Or at least a little damp, because, yeah, you know, rain showers here in Portland, it's showery. It's not a downpour, so.
Yeah. I was born here, so I'm used to the weather.
Oh, man. So you're just all warm and cozy all the time, then.
I guess so.
Well, to kind of bring it into our topic today, gatekeeping is a term that maybe not a lot of folks are familiar with. It's something that is rampant in all sorts of communities. I actually looked up a definition and I found it to be the activity of controlling or limiting the general access to something. And that is such a broad definition. But in the terms of what we're going to be talking about today, mostly focusing on women and the feminist movement, I know, Tabitha, you have been a big advocate for feminism and especially within the geek culture. So would you like to elaborate on what defines gatekeeping for you?
So gatekeeping is when someone says, well, I really like this thing. And then someone starts basically interrogating you. It's like, oh, well, who's your favorite character? Well, who do you know who this? What about, like, this plot point that happened in the story? And basically, like, quizzing someone to, like, check out their creds to make sure you're, like, legitimate and not, like, a poser or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that in a very general term is, like, my definition of gatekeeping about... Like, if you say, like, oh, I'm a goth, it's like, oh, well, do you, like, I know with goths, it's not so much that you just wear the clothes, but also do you listen to these bands, or do you know, like, the history of goth,
mm-hmm,
or all this other stuff. With today's discussion about, like, fake geek girls, like you said, I am a geek, and I'm particularly interested in, like, feminism and also just representation in general in geek culture. And so I'm kind of excited for today's discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, too, I know feminism and with the term fake geek girl, for me, I always just picture, you know, the trend that went around probably like 10 or 15 years ago where wearing glasses was cool. And not a requirement for enhancing your vision.
I think that's still a thing.
Yeah. And so I find it hard to, you know, quantify their reasoning behind wearing glasses just for it to be like a fashion statement.
Yeah.
Because like myself and like you, Tabitha, we both need them for our vision, increase our vision. And so it's hard when certain things are actually like oppressive to you directly.
Yeah.
I just find that difficult too. So I'm glad that we're going to have this discussion and kind of go forward and bringing some clarity and enlightenment on that. But I wanted to ask you, David, for gatekeeping, I know you don't identify as a female, but what terms do you kind of define when you hear about gatekeeping? Like, what comes to mind?
I think a lot of the, I've been seeing it just with different channels I watch on the internet, you know, like YouTube channels and stuff like that. It seems, though, like we're at a point where you can't really get away without someone being offended by something. And gatekeeping is basically if someone is not happy with the way someone else or some entity or whatever is keeping, I don't know, it's ethereal in many ways because I don't really know what you're going to, like what you're doing that's going to make someone unhappy. I'm getting off subject. What I mean is I've seen a lot of the things like you're saying earlier with someone as being like, you're not true fan. You're not like I know people who actually have liked the first three episodes of Star Wars and other people, you know, go off on that because, you know, that's, you're not a true fan. You're not allowed to do that. And when I think of this, you know, this, the whole idea of gatekeeping, I'm at the point where kind of like, who cares?
Right.
Like you like what you like. And when you use that as a reason to keep someone down or to be offended by someone else who does like something, I don't know, there's an easier way to be happy.
Right, right. And there's also like, who gives that qualification to know, like, I'm the one that sets these standards? Like, who gave them that authorization?
Yeah. Is there like a National Council of Geek Creds?
That if you like Star Wars, you must like episodes 4, 5, and 6. Like,
prequels don't count.
Yeah. Right.
It's not true Star Wars.
Right. So that's always a question I think about, too, is like, who set that bar? Or if it's just a kind of a personal thing, just because they like or dislike something that they have to make sure everyone is either with them or not.
It's you know, I think this has been going on forever, but
right. But
it's in many ways amplified because of the internet era and the fact that people are able to put themselves out there so readily. And we get ourselves in a feedback loop kind of where, like, let's say I want to, you know, I have that interest of being on stage or whatever it is, and I want to put myself out there. So I create a YouTube channel for whatever it is I'm doing, like doing makeup or whoever it is. And then you invite yourself to be basically the age of trolls, and you invite that. You know, I shouldn't say you invite it. You don't want that. No one invites that.
Right.
But it happens. So it's a way to chill discussion, chill someone who wants to actually do something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we can. I wish there was a way to stop, or I just don't know what the solution is. But
yeah.
So if I want to put myself out there, inevitably. You become a gatekeeper and you get attacked
right. For
whatever reason. It's just silly.
Or people will say, since you're on the internet, you're not a real geek. You're just a poser. You're just doing this for attention.
Yeah. And I think it's also hard too, because the way that people are getting exposed now to are through social media outlets and through the internet. And so, yes, like you said, David, you're kind of opening yourself to trolls and things like that. But at the same time, you also have to defend what you believe in, but what you're also passionate about. And some of the pieces that we'll hear later on in the show, they talk about that. It's just like they've opened themselves up to a social media platform that's going to be exposed to the public and spread worldwide. And how to bring themselves to not only take action, but be able to not back down in what they believe just because other people disagree with them. And I want to say that there is going to be a solution. I don't know what it is, and I don't think we should figure it out today, but I'm glad that we're actually opening this discussion, because a lot of people don't feel comfortable even talking about gatekeeping and what it means. And especially coming from a point of view as myself identified as a female, it's like hard because it brings up some negative experiences, you know, and hard feelings. And so being able to present that in a way that people are exposed to and understanding that it's hurtful, that it's not something that should be continuing, but to also educate people. I think that's also a thing, too, is that there's just so much raw emotion that gets behind a lot of these things that people don't take the time to educate themselves.
Yeah. So should we define what a fake geek girl is?
Sure.
So it was, it's an accusation thrown at women who identify as geeks that they're not real geeks, and especially the ones that cosplay and dress up because they're just dressing up for the attention of men.
Hmm.
And, oh, that term just gets my blood boiling so much. Because first, I think it's really arrogant for, like, especially for men to think, like, you're just doing this for attention and for our attention specifically, and just to get us to, like, pay attention to you and, like, just to get our, so, and it's, like, it's so arrogant. It's, like, women do this specifically for, to appeal to you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, once again, it gets into like, who are you to accuse someone that right. like they're like someone's creds,
right?
And that they're just a poser. Look, they went through the effort of making a costume, or making or at least buying a costume. They at least dressed up like the character,
mm-hmm.
like, and that disqualifies them as a geek. So a real geek like doesn't wear like. Doesn't wear their fandom on their sleeves. So all those people with like the Green Lantern t-shirts, you need to put those away.
Yeah, yeah. And on the flip side too, it also speaks negatively to those like female geeks that actually are doing something. Like they're super intelligent and designing games or writing comics or producing movies. That are doing something for geek culture, but they don't get the credibility or the acknowledgement because they're female.
Mm-hmm.
And that can, that's also a blood boiler as well, too, because it's like they're not, because they're doing something and they're doing it in a way that's geeky, but they're not a man. Like,
yeah.
it's really disturbing, but, It's hard to define things and not be angry because when you put a term on something, it could be used in a negative light. But at the same time, it's good to bring into the light what that term means. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to educate those people out there that are thinking that, oh, yeah, because I've watched all of the Spider-Man re-editions movies, I know the whole backstory behind Peter Parker. Yes and no, because, yes, they can say that they enjoy Spider-Man, but I don't think that they're in a place where they can actually have a conversation with somebody that's read all the comic books and knows the backstory and all of that kind of thing. Not to say that they shouldn't have conversations with mm-hmm. those people, but I do believe that having that education, like I said earlier, having that education and understanding certain fandoms and things too, and being able to defend yourself when you don't know an answer to something, because that you will get quizzed and you will get trolled and you
yeah.
will have yourself exposed in a social media and whatever light that you present yourself in, and to be prepared. But I think this is a good topic for us to start with. I'd like to transition to one of our pieces that we have today. Last month, David, you were here when we were talking about Geek Girl Con, and one of the members that attended Geek Girl Con from our collective was Rob, and he was able to interview Anita Sarkeesian. She is the executive director of the nonprofit educational organization Feminist Frequency, and she talks about gatekeeping and her experiences and the positivity behind Geek Girl Con and what it is actually doing for the feminist movement and geek culture. So why don't we take a listen to that?
All right.
So for our listeners who might not know of the epic Anita Sarkeesian, would you like to just give us a quick rundown
yeah.
of like who you are, what you do, why you're awesome, and why people say praises?
Absolutely. I mean, that's for you to say that I'm awesome, but...
Oh, no, we have it on tape.
excuse me. I am... So I run Feminist Frequency, which is an educational nonprofit. We look at the way women are represented within popular culture. So our biggest, our most well-known project to date is called Tropes Versus Women in Video Games, where we're specifically looking at some of the really harmful, kind of degrading representations of women throughout the history of gaming. We also are in the process of releasing our latest series called Ordinary Women Daring to Defy History, and that is telling the stories of women who've been written out of history, because too often the history books are full of stories about men, and women are completely erased from all of the incredible, amazing things that we've done. And actually, like, some of the work that women have done has been so instrumental to changing the way that we exist today. You know, if it wasn't for women, computers wouldn't look like they do currently, for example. And so I think it's really important that we share and tell those stories.
I have to ask, were you referencing Lovelace?
Yeah. So one of the women we're talking about is Ada Lovelace, who was the first computer programmer, who, sadly, when she was alive, men were constantly undermining her at that time as well. She had a doctor who said that she was sick because she was using her woman brain for man things. And so, I hear
that can cause the vapors.
Yeah, God. And so, shortly thereafter, she died of cancer. So, one, tragic, but also high science, right?
Yeah.
And even today, her legacy is disputed. So it was really important to us in our video to unequivocally say she is the first computer programmer. She was, she imagined things at that time that were just almost impossible to imagine. It was incredible. So she foresaw the digital age of what we exist in now. Not exactly how it is now, obviously, but to be able to have that foresight and that imagination is just incredible.
I should say so. For our listeners, where can they go to watch this series?
Yeah, so our website, feministfrequency.com, has all of our videos. It has a whole video archive. It also, we just revamped it, so it's got a bunch of new stuff on it as well. We have a resource section that has tons of different things on it. So if you want suggestions of games, movies, TV shows, comics, books that we recommend that we think have either feminist or social justice kinds of lenses or interesting things in them, we have we have pages full of that. We also have resources.
Binders
full of resources. It's great. We also have guides to, if you want to make your workplace more, hire more women and make it more friendly to women. We have some resources and suggestions of places to find information about that. So there's just a ton of stuff that we added to the site. So feministfrequency.com.
Very cool. I'll be definitely checking that out.
Yeah.
So Geek Girl Con, as you said, is this amazing, safe, welcoming, inclusive environment. It's not like other conventions I've been to, for sure. And it's a relatively new innovation as of 6 years ago. So in context of, you've been through a lot with Gamergate, which is what I hate to bring up, and I don't want to give too much airtime to this, basically the put beep in here that you've had to deal with. But maybe you could speak to how Gamergate impacted you professionally, personally, and tell us, clearly the culture is moving in a positive direction, or at least that's what we're seeing here. So maybe you could talk about what the culture is developing through Gamergate and going, from what we see here in a positive direction, but you would be more authority on that than I.
Sure. What we now call Gamergate was an incident that occurred, that's funny to say that occurred in the summer of 2014. Zoe Quinn, who is a game developer, her ex-boyfriend wrote a screed online that was full of lies.
What is a screed?
I don't even know that. I feel like a screed. He wrote a blog post that was just a really hateful, angry blog post. And put it out into all of the areas in which the communities harass women, 4chan, Reddit, that sort of thing. And so the content of this blog post was full of lies, just saying that she had slept with reporters to get coverage for her game, which never happened. Tons of stuff that came into it. It really legitimately was domestic violence. And what happened from there is it sort of exploded. The harassment exploded onto women in the gaming industry because there was this myth around the fact that it was that the harassment, which they obviously the harassers didn't call it harassment, were defending ethics in games journalism. That was the sort of their tagline, which was not it at all, because you don't send death threats and rape threats and misogynist and racist and transphobic slurs to women online through all of their channels and just basically try to destroy their lives and silence them if you're trying to have a conversation about ethics and games journalism, right?
Right.
Which is a conversation to have, but that's not what they were doing at all. If we rewind a couple of years, I launched a Kickstarter in 2012 to fund the series that I spoke about previously, looking at women in video games, and that's when the harassment for me really started. So my entire social media, all my emails, every way that you could possibly get a hold of me, my Kickstarter account, was all flooded with harassment. They would send pizzas to addresses they thought were mine with extra sausage because they think that that's funny. There were campaigns to take down all of my social media accounts, take down my videos on YouTube, which sometimes they were successful at doing, knock my website offline for days at a time. They organized campaigns to contact the IRS and the FBI to say that I'm a fraud and a con artist because I was raising money to pay for a video series, which this has been going on for years. Like, it started then and it still continues,
wow.
Right? It hasn't stopped. So when Gamergate came around, it was just like an extension, like the next saga for me of the harassment. And I'm not the only woman by any means that's been harassed. That same year in 2012, Jennifer Hepler was harassed at BioWare. And Felicia Day was harassed for making a country music video about video games because how dare she do something fun and interesting and cute.
Right.
Aisha Tyler was harassed for hosting the E3 Ubisoft show. And so, you know, and this just went on and on and on, right? And eventually what happened is I think the media actually started covering these stories. They actually started talking about these issues, about the way that women are, and these are just the big names, right? Like, there are so many women who are being harassed that don't get the spotlight and don't get known and don't get the support that they need. And that was one of the things that happened with Gamergate too, is that just so many more women got sucked into these harassment campaigns that just weren't as visible and weren't getting the support that they needed. So, you know, folks like me and Zoe got a lot of media time, a lot of airtime. And, you know, we were trying to say, like, it's not just us. There's so many people being harassed right now, and it's really intense. Excuse me. So the thing about the harassment is that it hasn't stopped. You know, we often talk about Gamergate in the past tense, and we often talk about, like, harassment online in the past tense, especially in gaming, because that was sort of like a peak in some ways. But we just don't, those of us who are targeted don't talk about it every day because, like, it's exhausting. It's
right.
Exhausting for our followers and our viewers. It's exhausting for us because we need to live our lives and do our work and actually, you know, one of the things is being recognized for the work that we do and not for being victims of harassment.
Right.
So, you know, the harassment still happens, and you ask any of us who are being harassed that it's not, it's still a daily occurrence.
I mean, is there a rhyme or reason to the harassment?
Sure.
I'm not trying to condone or justify it.
So we're talking about... we're talking about a group of men, mostly men, who have an enormous sense of entitlement. And, you know, if you want to get really feminist theory on this, you know, patriarchy tells men that this is where entitlement comes from. Like, any communities of privilege have entitlement. That's what privilege is,
right.
one of the bases of privilege. So you have men who are told their entire lives from growing up that they deserve hot women. They deserve fast cars. They deserve, like, good jobs. You know, I'm being a little silly about it, but, like, this is legitimate, right? They deserve good paying jobs. They deserve women. They deserve a lot of money. They deserve, like, all of the things that society deems as success. And when they don't get that, because most people don't, they get real mad.
Right.
And so folks who live in the intersections of oppression are used to not getting these things, right? Like, we don't tend to lash out aggressively when we don't get our way, because you're used to living constantly undermined, right? And that's one of the horrible, sad things about oppression and privilege. So I think that a lot of men who felt this sense of aggrieved entitlement, of feeling like they deserve all these things and not getting them, get really angry at women. And that is the outlet that they put their aggression on. And so video games are something that this group has deemed is a male pastime that looks a particular way, that games can only exist in this sort of macho domain. And when there's any question about that, when there's anyone that comes in and says, hey, women game too, and we always have, and we've always been in these communities, and we've always been playing and making games, they get really pissed. And so some of it, I think, is that sort of like deep anger of lashing out against women that they see as encroaching on their territory, on their male domain. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is... Sorry. I don't know if I can say that.
Oh, no, it's okay. We'll that. You just gave me an amazing, like, discourse.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. This is great.
So this is a Radio Geekly, and we've been here with Anita
Sarkeesian.
Anita, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was the interview with Anita Sarkeesian and our collective member, Rob, here. And you're listening to A Radio Geekly. We were talking about gatekeeping, especially with its emphasis on the oppression of women. What did you guys think about that piece?
Oh, I love Anita Sarkeesian. I follow her YouTube channel. I would really like to go to the Geek Girl Con sometime and meet her, shake her hand.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I love her.
Yeah. So, Rob, how was your experience being there firsthand?
Let's see. Well, Geek Girl Con in general was fantastic. It was a really safe environment like I've never experienced before. And Anita in particular was just fantastic to interview. Just I can't give her enough praise. She's a great representation of the community. She is she's everything that you would espouse to be as like an inclusive, social justice, equitably oriented individual, a representative of the geek culture, par none.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish I could go too, like you were saying, Tabitha, because it just sounded like such a great event to empower girls and help them learn, but also just expose them to these awesome women that are doing awesome things in geek culture. And to be at a point where they're going through and exposing things like gatekeeping, like the social justice movement and increasing of feminism and things like that is just super great. So I encourage all of you to check out her website, feministfrequency.org, and you can see all of the great things that she is doing with her organization. And feministfrequency.com. I have the right suffix there, feministfrequency.com, and you can see her videos that she was talking about, and all of the resources that she gives for people to encourage them to take action and take a stand on things like that.
Yay!
Woohoo! That's just one of those.
Should people also maybe check out geekgirlcon.com?
Oh, yes. I strongly encourage checking out geekgirlcon.
I've always wanted to, when I first heard about it like a few years ago, I've always wanted to go, but I've had a few barriers to going, but maybe next 2017.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just can't wait. There's so many cons to go to.
It's just insane.
Well, while we're talking about gatekeeping and things like that, I know earlier in the show we were talking about, is there a way that we can all kind of, can't we all just get along, for lack of a better term?
Yeah. Well, so I've sort of had this internal struggle about, I've had this slight resentment that I sort of recognized recently about how it's cool to be a geek. Like on Facebook, some people I went to high school with, they found me and friended me. And I see them like dressing up, cosplaying as Star Wars characters. Mm-hmm. And like with all this geeky stuff. And like in high school, like I was totally into Star Wars, and I'm like, where were you? Why didn't you talk to me? And I don't know if, and like, I don't want to start like gatekeeping. It's like, are you only doing this because it's cool now? But I also like, were you always into Star Wars and mm-hmm. we just didn't know about it? Or you knew I was into Star Wars, but you don't want to be like ostracized and were like ashamed? Because like I knew in high school, like I didn't broadcast like my geekiness because right. like I didn't want to be ostracized and like weirder than I already was. So I feel like this slight resentment that about like how I guess you could say it's cool now.
Mm-hmm. And I guess on that term, instead of feeling resentment, you can also feel empowered to educate them on things too. Of just yeah. like, yeah, there's more things about the Star Wars franchise that you might not know about. Are you interested? Because I could tell you about them. And you know, it's cooler than just getting those cool little BB-8 toys at Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. That there's actually a backstory behind all of that kind of thing. And so I try to tend to like for myself when it came to Harry Potter, I was late jumping on the bandwagon for Harry Potter. But I was told that if I was going to have any experience in talking with fan clubs or going on blogs, that I would need to read not only all 7 books, but watch the movies, research things about, you know, the history of J.K. Rowling and understanding where she was coming from and writing those books, too, just to be prepared, because there were gatekeepers and there still are. There still are several Harry Potter gatekeepers out there. But to be prepared in that sense of, well, did you know about this? And, you know, now that they have the new movie out that is pre-Harry Potter, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the fans that are so engulfed in the Harry Potter franchise are excited, but then they're also kind of nervous because now we're getting new fans jumping on and they're like, well, this isn't Harry Potter. This is before Harry Potter. Yes, it's in the same universe and the same, you know, genre of fantasy and things like that. But it is slightly different. So be prepared and don't attack these movies and the upcoming storyline just because Harry Potter's not in it, you know. So
I think there's something to be said here about cultural appropriation, because I totally know where you're coming from, Tabitha, where it feels like almost like something's been stolen out of something that you held dear for years and years. And it's weird to consider what cultural appropriation looks like and feels like and indicates, because on one hand you could say it's a form of theft by, you know, an outside culture to what would be considered an interior culture, but on the other hand you could consider it a win by a culture in having you know the fruits of your labors become so cool that it starts to breach the cultural boundary and go places that it was never intended to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do actually feel really good for like kids that like geeky kids in high school, and I'm hoping they're not getting bullied now. So I'm trying to keep this in a positive light, but it's like it's also hard not to think about like your own experiences and your own like sort of shame you felt being a geek growing up, and like why it wasn't cool back then, but now it's cool now. So I just like to focus on like young and aspiring geeks now, and hopefully they're not being bullied and teased for like that Star Trek backpack.
Yeah, and there's something there with, and I go back to Star Wars. I think about sexy Darth Vader, where it's like as soon as a Halloween costume comes out that's like sexy Darth Vader or sexy Stormtrooper or any, yeah. whatever, mm-hmm. I think that's where the boundary gets crossed between something that celebrates the struggles of a culture, like being a nerd bag in, you know, what, 1980s high school. There's that took effort, that took struggle, and then when the appropriation of culture gets to a form that cheapens that struggle, that's where we start to feel bad.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to start gatekeeping. It's just like, you weren't into it in high school like I was. But so it's like, they are perfectly fine in getting into Star Wars and enjoying Star Wars now. But also,
I know how you feel. It's you feel like this was what was making me special. This is my community that, you know, brought us and other people like me, and now suddenly it's being invaded, despite the fact that, you know, Star Wars is a money-making juggernaut. You can't really help that anyway, but now you are no longer this, you know, this thing that bonds you with other people. Suddenly, oh, I know someone who likes Star Wars too. This person who, you know, is nothing like you and someone you wanted nothing to be like, but now you have this thing bonding, like, oh, I'm no longer special. I don't want to be like this person, or I don't want them to be like me, so I gotta move on to something else. It's kind of, it makes me think of the whole, like, well, now people want to live here because we made it cool with the art community. It's like, well, that's the way it works. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just the how you made it something people want, and now that people want it, you just gotta move on and suck it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think ultimately here we kind of talk about unification despite difference. And I think that's hard for a lot of people to swallow in terms of just trends, but also cultures and fandoms and things like that, to unify us because we all like the same things, even though we might look different and think different and talk different. We all can be unified in that appreciation. And I think a lot of times with the conventions like Geek Girl Con and things like that, that we can look at those and embrace them. Like, yeah, we can have geeky girls that are still into Star Wars, and, you know, we can have geeky girls that like game design. You know, we could have geeky girls like Ada Lovelace, who was one of the first computer programmers, you know, just being able to see and set those platforms and knowing that it's cool, it's okay, that we can move forward together and be unified in that. And I know, David, you were talking about a book speech that you went to, or I'm not sure exactly what the right term would be.
Well, I thought this kind of was with the subject of today's what we're doing here. Brandon Sanderson, one of my favorite authors, was speaking at Powell's last year, and he gave a good speech kind of dealing with the whole geek girl thing and acceptance, despite the fact that, you know, it's kind of like people are, the culture of the geekdom is becoming more accepted, or, you know, and how you want to lash out and say, no, that's not right. Like, that's not true geekdom, or that's not what this is. So I thought this was kind of appropriate, just not getting so wound up about it and going, hey, let's try to see what still makes us, you know, together, and what makes us more alike than it is to separate us. So
yeah, let's take a listen to that. And Brandon Sanderson,
A blog I was reading a little while back that I found very interesting. This is by a blogger named Bonnie Burton, and she wrote, "As a geek girl, I've been accused of wearing Star Wars shirts to get attention from guys. I've been told to move to the side and let real gamers play the demos at conventions. Lately, it seems elements of geek community have become a lot less a welcome wagon and more a judgmental Jedi council that refuses to let newbies in, especially if they happen to be girls. In a community once known for celebrating outcasts and underdogs, it sometimes now seems like you have to take some sort of Voight-Kampff test to prove your geekdom is legit." And just to prove hers is legit, she included a Blade Runner reference. So this is actually something I've noticed that's kind of started to bother me, and it's bigger than this one issue. It has to do with trying to get people to not love the things that we love for some reason. Like, it seems like it's a very natural sort of thing. But when comic book movies started getting big, my friends were all like, "You guys aren't true nerds. You're just enjoying those movies. We read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Iron Man or whatever it was way back when." And whenever something gets popular, we tend to kind of look down at it. Anyone here? I've done it. It's part of what made me write this speech. Anyone made fun of Twilight? Aragon? Yeah. Yeah, whatever it is, like, it seems like our discourse, and I think the internet is doing something to this that's kind of scary. Our discourse has stopped being, well, this is what I love and why I like it, and this is what I dislike and why I dislike it, and become, you are an idiot. You should not be reading that. And this is kind of a counterpoint to a lot of stuff I felt when I was in college. This is a different type of it, but I am... My 1A- in my master's program was from a professor who was a poet, and the book I was submitting was The Way of Kings. And he couldn't give me an A on that. He just couldn't make himself because it was this genre fiction trash. But within the genre fiction, we do the same thing. We're like, well, that's the trash over there. You shouldn't be reading that. You should read this great stuff. Now, I don't want to say we shouldn't criticize. Criticism is actually important. The scholarship of looking at why is a book working? Why is it not working? Why don't I like it? I'm not saying you have to like things. I'm not saying you have to be quiet about why you don't like them. But the problem is less about scholarship and more about shaming, right? When you start shaming people for what they read, you get into troubles with this sort of thing. And that kind of undermines this whole idea that books are about getting to know different people. They're about bringing together, you know, a middle-aged woman living in the Middle East and a Mormon dude from Nebraska, right? Like, that is what fiction is about. And so my challenge to you is, next time somebody's reading something that you're like, oh no, can I get them to not read that? How about instead you read it yourself? Now, you don't have to like it. In fact, you probably won't. But what I want you to do is I want you to look at why they like it. And if you can figure out why they love that piece of writing, I think that will tell you a lot about them and will kind of forward this, advance this whole cause, that we, the reason we tell stories in the first place, which is to get to know each other. Thank you very much.
A little piece from Brandon Sanderson in his talk. David, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background about Brandon Sanderson, because myself, I didn't know who he was.
He's an author who I would say is kind of prolific, considering his first book wasn't published until 2005. He's got easily over a couple dozen. He's my favorite author. I'm kind of partial to him because he also grew up in Nebraska.
Okay.
But some of the stuff that he's written, like the Stormlight series, Elantris is one of my favorite books. He does a young adult thing, Reckoners, where it's like an alien being comes to, you know, a meteor and certain people start getting superpowers. It's really a lot of fun in different genres. Mistborn is one popular that a lot of gamers have taken up. Role-playing game is huge here. People, when he came to Portland, actually, a couple years back, people actually embraced, like, came to him and wanted to make a role-playing game after this series, and he's like, sure, do it. And now it's like one of the more popular role-playing games, and they're always having Mistborn things here in Portland. So
isn't Mistborn done by one of our local Portland game designers, Mr. Alex Flagg, I believe?
Yeah, but it was done in Portland.
That's
pretty
cool.
We'll see if we can get him on the air, like, at the end of the program.
Can we verify
texting
this?
Texting him now.
Right, exactly.
Portland is a pretty geeky city.
Yeah. I highly recommend this author, and I think what he had to say, his message was, you know, sure, people like Twilight, but that doesn't mean that, you know, there's something wrong with this person. Everyone likes their things. So try to see what makes you more, you know, together than it is to just drive a wedge between each other because someone has a separate taste or some variation of a taste that you have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the biggest takeaway, I think, from our conversation today is to look at the inclusion and inclusivity of geeks in all different genres. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we were going to make this a multi-part series. So in the next few months on a Radio Geekly, we'll still talk about the topic of gatekeeping, focusing on different communities, the POC community, the LGBTQ communities, and just continuing this discussion, because I think it's important that everybody is educated and understands that being a geek comes in many forms, and knowing that it's okay to be a geek and be a female, and it's okay to be a geek and be a person of color. And so just to know and understand and embrace that, like you were saying, David, that to try to find that unifying underlying platform instead of trying to poke out all the differences and creating sides and creating diversity and things.
Yeah, why do we all have to hate each other? We can just like, okay, you don't have to like something exactly the way I like something. That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think about what, I think it was a couple months ago, Tabitha, you and Jenna were talking about Star Trek and how each of you liked different iterations mm-hmm. of the franchise and how, I mean, it's been going on for decades.
50 years.
Yeah.
Star Trek just celebrated its 50th anniversary back in September 1966. I can't remember specifically what day in September 1966, but that was the premiere of Star Trek.
Yeah. And so, and just to kind of go through and having basically generations of people following these characters and following the storyline and the development and being engulfed in this world and in this universe.
And the J.J. Abrams movies, like, mm-hmm. as much criticism as they get, but they're drawing in new fans.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's just awesome that there's so many differences. And I also think about The Simpsons, David, not to pull you in again, but you are a Matt Groening fan here. You know more about Matt Groening than I think any of us here in the room do. But, I mean, The Simpsons has been going on for quite a while. What did I say, 30? Is it 30 years now?
28 seasons.
Whew. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's crazy that I grew up watching them, and now it's still on TV, and it's like, now I'm gonna be showing it to my children. Like, it's just hard to fathom.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. So I don't know. It's I think with all of these different topics and fandoms and things like that we can all kind of embrace a unity that comes together, that we can all be alike and enjoy those similar things. So I like Brandon's piece about that you can find differences, but it's still okay to like the same things too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. We can all get along. We can role play a better world.
Right.
In the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's all be geeky together.
Yeah. So as we wind down this show today, we wanted to mention some upcoming events that all of you listeners can check out for the next few weeks. And we will be back on the air in January. January, I believe it is the 4th. No, not the 4th. The 6th. January the 6th. We'll be back on the air at 11 a.m. And
the new year.
New year, 2017. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be awesome. Some things you could check out, though, in the month of December. From starting today and going through December 11th, the Portland Art Museum will be showing a Japanese film festival called Japanese Cultures, presented by the Northwest Film Center. You can find out more information at nwfilm.org. There is also the East Portland Holiday Bazaar, Tabitha, you were mentioning, at the Jade Epano Multicultural Space.
Mm-hmm. December 10th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Very cool. And David, you also mentioned that there was a 49th annual celebration of Oregon authors at the Oregon Historical Society on December the 4th. Was there a time on
that? It's from noon to 4, and I'm hoping to, like, I'll be there. We'll check out some authors, maybe even find some people who are willing to meet us for Between the Covers for here at KBOO.
Yeah, Between the Covers, another awesome show here on KBOO. You can check out more information about that event at ohs.org, and the event for the East Portland Holiday Bazaar is at apano.org. And Rob, you had a few things as well, just, that were coming up.
Just a few things to mention. Number one, NewCon PDX. That's going to be happening December 30th through January 1st. And I believe that's at the PDX Waterfront Marriott. Then we're, as we get farther into the first quarter of 2017, GameStorm happens at the Jansen Beach Red Lion. That's March 30th through April 2nd. And then, because we're on the subject of gatekeeping, let's say you want to run a convention, that may exist now or may not exist at all. Well, we happen to be so lucky as to live near Tacoma, Washington, where between June 16th and June 18th, there is ConComCon.
So say that one more time.
That's
what?
Con, C-O-N, Com, C-O-M. con, C-O-N. And you can find it at .com.
That's a tongue twister.
Con.com. What is this convention specialize in? Well, it's a meeting of people who like to run conventions. So if you want to know more about how to run a convention, what you should or shouldn't do, what has worked for other people, the ticket price right now is only $35. And it's Tacoma, Washington. I believe they're at the Best Western in Tacoma. So if you're interested, check them out.
But it's not until June?
That's correct.
Okay.
But tickets are cheap now.
We'll be mentioning that in the future, too. But fun fact, I met Rob at GameStorm. So it'll be a one-year friendiversary.
Yay!
And Becky, too. Yay! Oh, friends, we just enjoy it so much. If you have any more events, feel free to send that to our email address, aradiogeekly@kboo.fm. Go on to our Facebook page where you can get updated events, pictures, things like that. You can see the lovely picture of Tabitha and our other collective member, Jenna, on the homepage there for this event for today's show at facebook.com/radiogeekly, all one word. We are also on Twitter doing all the tweets and things at Radio Geekly, and Radio Geekly, both R and G are capitalized. And we are going to be promoting more things coming up here at the end of the year. But any final thoughts from you all today about gatekeeping, about things that you are looking forward to in the future, the end of 2016, introducing 2017? For me, I know I'm really excited to watch a Harry Potter because it always just brings about holiday spirit for me. I'm such a nerd when it comes to Harry Potter that I'm going to do a binge watch of all eight movies.
Nine, with counting Fantastic Beasts.
Yes, yes. So nine. So yes, I have a lot of movie watching to do. So that's my holiday. What about you, Tabitha?
Can I?
Yes, you can go back around. All right, Rob.
Let's see my holiday plans. This weekend I have to build shelving to house game parts and game things and gamey stuff. So that's part of the holidays, right? Building stuff, putting stuff up, organizing, cleaning. Mm-hmm. You know. I did want to say one other thing about what critical conversations and opinions and being able to like things. And I think it's important, and this is me coming from a University of Iowa English degree, and I feel it's important to note that there is a difference between feeling entitled to have your appraisal of a narrative respected and engaging in critical conversation. Because I think it's important to say, yes, anyone can like anything, and that is totally fine. However, if somebody tries to convince me that certain stories are well articulated, especially when compared to other stories, or certain stories are well articulated as a standalone story, well, that invites a critical conversation where we can go back to the hero's journey, we can analyze it, and it is possible that that the opinion that something is well articulated in terms of a narrative may be incorrect if we take an academic stance on it, and it's not okay to feel entitled to be, you know, quote unquote right in asserting that something is a quality story in context of a greater ecosystem and critical theory.
Right.
But everyone can like anything that they want.
Well said. Well said. David, holiday plans?
Well, there is. I'm going to finish the season of South Park, which I think has been great. It has to deal with trolling and the whole Trump phenomena. It's been a great arc. I don't know if you've seen that. I don't know if you're watching, but that show is one that just keeps firing on all cylinders, in my opinion. I don't know.
And
if
another
you,
show that's like it's still on TV.
Yeah. It to me though, that one it just keeps getting better. It's kind of amazing if you've stepped out, step back in on that one. Donald Glover, another geek. I don't know if you know who he is.
Childish Gambino.
Yeah, he was on The Community. He wrote for 30 Rock. His series on FFX.
Oh, Atlanta.
FXX Atlanta. It's phenomenal. So I'm gonna finish that out. If you haven't seen that. There's a new Star Wars movie coming out this month, I believe.
Right, the 16th, right?
I'm so excited.
So that's something to take advantage of.
Yeah. Ah, so many fun things. I'm excited. Well, I hope all of you enjoy the rest of December. Happy New Year. We will be back on the first week of January. This is Radio Geekly on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And stay tuned for Moving On coming at noon. Thanks, everyone. Take care and enjoy your week.